Welcome, everybody, to Conversations That Matter. I'm your host, Alex Newman from the New American Magazine. We have a very special guest for you today. He's going to talk about one of those subjects that you're not actually allowed to talk about. It's about the coup that took place in our country and the illegitimate regime, two subjects that YouTube will cancel you for. But that's why we brought him on. Chuck is just an incredible source of wisdom and knowledge. We've had him on before to talk about his books and various topics. He's an extremely interesting individual. He hosts Charles Moskowitz Live every Monday through Friday, 10 to 12 Eastern Time. He's listed as Talkers Magazine Top 100 Radio Host and also the 2003 National Right to Work Committee as Communicator of the Year. He is a veteran radio host. He is an author. He's written numerous books. He wrote Sociology for Conservatives and even one about the devil that we had him on to discuss some months ago. Today, we're going to talk about a new book that he just released. It's called The Biden Coup, The Sociopolitical Effects of an Illegitimate Regime. And Chuck, let's start with the first and most obvious question. Are you suggesting that they stole the election?
Indeed, I am. And it happened in broad daylight. Everyone knows what happened. 60% on average of people polled, Republicans, from the time of the election right up till today, believe it was stolen. An average of 30% of Democrats, growing numbers of independents. And I would contend that everyone in their heart of hearts, whether they want to admit it or not, knows exactly what happened. It was the biggest conspiracy event in American history, without question. I think Donald Trump makes the point that it's possibly the biggest conspiracy in the history of the world, right in broad daylight, and that's how it happened. That's how they do that. That's how often the deep state, as Trump calls it, or the administrative state, conducts their business. I mean, the Kennedy assassination was done in broad daylight as well, and everyone saw that. And then they send their spokesperson out, their Mandarin, if you will, to fix everything. In that case, it was Walter Cronkite, by announcing the one nut lone gunman theory, and anybody who disagreed with that was called a conspiracy theorist. The same thing has happened here, except now they've tried to clamp down media-wise on any discussion, and it is not working. They didn't expect all of these alternative medias to come out. They shut down Parler, but out came Gab and BitChute and Rumble and all of the other medias that we now use, and that they are building momentum. So you cannot suppress what happened. It is emerging. More and more evidence is coming out every day. And I urge people to take an objective look at this, put aside their political blinders and take a look, because there's nothing more serious than the integrity of our elections, than the right of a one man, one woman, one vote. And if we don't have that, we're going to lose all freedom. And that's why they did this.
Yeah, it's really a bizarre situation, Chuck, because I agree with you. I mean, your average American understands this. The Rasmussen polling showed over 50% of Americans thought the 2020 election was plagued by fraud and quite possibly rigged. So you have a situation now where most Americans think that we had a rigged 2020 election. And yet I was kicked off a fascist book for mentioning that the night after the election. They literally blocked me and said I had to appeal if I wanted to come back on or whatever. And so you have people who are scared to talk about this, but what are some of the socio-political and what are some of the effects of living in, you know, what was once the greatest, freest country in the world now, where most people think that we have rigged elections? I mean, what is that doing to our psyche? What is that doing to us as a nation?
Well, psychologically, we have to embrace and imbibe this big lie, and it's not working. It's demoralizing for the country. There's a disconnect between those who have an interest in preserving the lie, and they are very, very powerful forces, and their minions. And I divide it up into two groups. You have the witting participants in the conspiracy, and I get into this in my book, how they actually pulled this off. And then you have the unwitting massive numbers of people who had been brainwashed into despising Donald Trump. You know, we can take issue with his politics from time to time. We don't even necessarily have to like his personality, although I love Trump, but putting that aside, you know, but the point is that there's something abnormal about the hatred that people have for him. And I look into the possibility that this is some kind of a psyop. I look into the fact that going back to World War II, the CIA and the deep state, as Trump calls it, has experimented in mass manipulation and emotional manipulation of people on a mass scale They have used media and a consolidated control of media in order to do this. That doesn't mean that every media person is conscious of it. And they have used a kind of almost a Chinese water torture, drip, 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 drip every day. Little rumors about Trump. He might have made a stupid comment here and there, and all of a sudden it's blown up. I'm getting, you know, bulletins from the Boston Globe. You know, this is big news. Then the next day they quietly retract it because they had no source for it. And then they go on to the next one. And this happened month after month, year after year. It was a literal attempt to take Trump out of office. There was, we know about the conspiracy theories that they put out, these crackpot ideas that Trump was spying for Russia and that he was stalled by Russia. You can talk about that election anytime. And all these other nutcake conspiracy theories, they point a finger at us. And, you know, it just was a constant drumbeat. There was social pressure. There's a pressure to be fashionable and not be ostracized. There's all of that kind of psychological stuff going on. And the sum total of it was that people have this irrational hatred for Trump. They don't know why they feel that way, but they do. And that set the stage and it created the atmosphere by which the big steal could be done. That combined with the pandemic fear and mongering around that. And ultimately, a month before the election, they were able to mail out millions of unsolicited ballots. People were getting up to 40 ballots in the mail. And these ballots were trafficked. They were stuffed into the boxes. You have the issue of the voting machines, which is something that Mike Lindell has done a great job of exposing at great risk to his own business. And you have a lot of other tracks. There's several tiers in terms of how this was done. But with the intense hatred for Trump that was manufactured by the establishment, should there be any question that they were capable of doing it? I get into the background of this. I go back to the Wilson administration and the implementation of the administrative state, something that Alex, I've seen you talk about and do very well, and how they had a vested interest in preserving and advancing that administrative state. And Trump was a threat to that. Just even who he was threatened it. He threatened to wake up the American people to our own agency, to our own sovereignty, to our own understanding of who we are. And so they had to take him out and they had to discredit him. And we're now seeing the results. We're moving toward a medical dictatorship Karl Schwab, whatever his name is. And, you know, we're seeing a complete and ultimate loss of freedom. This is the new regime. And the question is this their last gasp or are they in power forever? I don't know the answer to that.
Fantastic, Chuck. Well, we've got a couple minutes before we go to break. And on the other side of the break, I want to ask you about the mechanics of this. How did they pull it off? The psychological propaganda, the terrorism that they used. And then finally, you know, is there any chance for reversing it? And how do we reverse it? But before we do that, I want to ask you about something that I've noticed. It seems to me that they're just accusing conservatives of doing exactly what they're doing. Just as one example, I live in a very, very conservative town. I think Republicans outnumber Democrats here like 3-1. And yet on my block, you've got 4 houses that have these goofy signs out front that say, reject the coup, January 6th, vote Democrat. So they're accusing Trump and Republicans of trying to wage a coup. We've got this January 6th commission that's, you know, hauling all these congressmen and Trump administration people through there, accusing them of an insurrection. Apparently the DOJ is even considering charges. And yet you're saying they're the ones that were doing all this. How could they pull this off? Are they really just projecting? Are they just accusing conservatives and Republicans of exactly the things that they did?
The coup happened on November 3rd. The assembly in Congress, which I get into in my book, which is January 6th of the election, following the election every 4 years, was to ratify the winner. And at that point, it is constitutional to raise questions in the states. That's what happened. I think that the incursion into the Capitol, and I get into evidence of that, was a false flag operation. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's becoming more obvious. They did a trial run with the alleged attempted kidnapping of the Michigan governor. And they basically, you know about that. And they did the same thing on January 6th. Who benefited from that? They installed themselves and they did it at midnight of that day.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chuck, we're going to go to break for just a moment. Folks out there, stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. Don't leave. We will be right back with more from Chuck Moore. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Alex Newman here with Conversations That Matter for the New American Magazine. We have with us a returning guest, a very special guest, Charles Moskowitz. He is a very insightful analyst, author of numerous books, and a great, great radio host. In fact, one of the best of the best. And he's just written a new book about the coup d'etat that took place in our beautiful, wonderful America. Charles, before we get into how we fix this, if it's even possible to fix this, I'm really wondering, how did they do this? I mean, walk us through the mechanics of the election fraud. You mentioned a little bit about the ballots and a little bit about the voting machines, but let's dig into this. And special attention, if you would, on the role of Mark Zuckerberg and the Zuckerbucks. I guess hundreds of millions of dollars went out. Walk us through how they stole this election.
Well, it sort of ran like the Manhattan Project during World War II, where you had like one group of people operating at the Alamogordo base doing a certain function. Then you had other people in Tennessee doing another function. Another group in University of Chicago doing another function, but nobody really knew what the others were doing. There were only a few select people at the top who knew what was actually going on and who had all of the information. So you had different functions. You had the voting machine issue, which again is brought up by Mike Lindell. Check out his work on this, it's fantastic. And attorney Sidney Powell. And by the way, the case against her was dropped apparently. Where they expose how the machines were online, how they were averaging votes, how they were, you know, it's interesting, the left used to talk about this all the time. Elizabeth Warren talked about this in the Senate. I mean, now all of a sudden they're not talking about it. But the machines, there's major problems with those and how they're manipulated. You had Mark Zuckerberg writing a personal check along with his wife for $420 million for street money, as it were, you know, to give to these phony turf groups who would then spread it around, kind of like, you know, like in the mob, they say greasing some palms, basically in select districts, select states, Atlanta, particularly Phoenix, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, you know, Detroit, to have people harvest ballots from nursing homes. We had people who had already passed away and then go to these boxes and stuff them in. You're only supposed to put one ballot in a box, and that's supposed to be either the voter or someone they designate, not hundreds of ballots. Dinesh D'Souza did a great job of exposing this in the movie 2000 Mules, which, by the way, is being censored by Fox News for some reason.
Yep, and Newsmax.
You know, really, yeah, I'm not surprised. And you had, you know, a complete blackout by the media. You had people, you know, with the affidavits, they didn't look at that at all, even though there were thousands of affidavits of eyewitnesses filed, and those are under the pains of perjury. You had a court system which decided to wash its hands of it by saying, and this is actually the most outrageous thing of all, we don't get involved in politics, really? I mean, I thought we had an independent judiciary that is exactly supposed to get involved in politics. We don't want to take any of these cases because it might change the outcome of the election. So they refused to take any of the cases. None of them made the inside of a courtroom. So the final point at which we could get to the truth was January 6th, when the assembly gathers to ratify the votes. And I go into a history of this, going back to the Jefferson election. Jefferson, as the head of the assembly and as vice president, declared himself president. I mean, you know, and there were some questions about that. I only point this up because it was completely constitutional that assembly was meant to ratify the delegates. And if there was a question, each state that questioned their delegates would have up to two hours to present evidence to the otherwise. And that the president of the assembly, who's also the vice president of the United States, then has an obligation to either recognize one or the other delegation or neither delegation. In which case it then goes into a special session where each state sends up one delegate and they decide who is the president of the United States. If that had happened, there are 32 states that have Republican majority houses, and it's the state legislator that does it. So Trump probably would have become president. That was the theory. It was completely constitutional. And now anyone involved in that is being criminalized. It's being, and they swept up people who are on the lawn that day, and they're still in prison without facing charges. And in some cases, there are horrible stories coming out of that prison. You know, it's not an easy place to be.
Yeah.
There is evidence that the FBI had people embedded into that who were probably the ringleaders in terms of breaking the door down. It was a disaster for, you know, getting to the truth. This was the last opportunity to get to the truth. And just as they were rolling it out, and just as the state of Arizona was presenting their evidence, in walks the guy with the fuzzy hat, you know, the fuzzy hat and the horns. Everything gets shut down, right? And then at midnight, they reconvene in darkness without any media, and they just gaveled Biden through. So you want to tell me about a coup? That's what a coup looks like.
Yeah, it really was incredible to witness that, Charles. We've got about 4 minutes left, and you know, I don't want to leave people completely with a sense of doom and gloom, although, you know, we don't want to sugarcoat the reality of the situation that we find ourselves in. But is there any chance to turn this around? And what kind of advice, recommendations would you give to a citizen out there who really does feel powerless, who feels like their country's been stolen from them through election fraud? What can an average person do to try to fix this?
There are thousands of people around the country volunteering at their local election boards. They're volunteering to man the election polling places, to be in the election counting rooms when these ballots are counted so that they can be inspected. Trump dropped the ball, frankly, on that in 2020, while Zuckerberg hired these thousands of people. And the fact is, we can be encouraged that thousands of people are volunteering for this work. If you're a housewife, if you're a teenager, if you're retired, if you have a little time on your hands and you want to do something for your country, get involved in your local precinct and go work at the poll on election day. Insist that you get to go in and be in the counting room when the absentee ballots are counted. Run for local comptroller or local office. You might find that you can win with very little effort because some of these offices have been held by someone for 20 years. And they've never shown up. So, you know, it's an interesting thing to do, and it's a way to take back your district. It worked in Virginia. That's why Youngkin won. He wasn't supposed to win, but he did because the Republican National Committee, which is pretty weak, but apparently they know damn well what happened. They brought in a staff of lawyers, and they also brought in thousands of volunteers, as did Youngkin, to man the polls. And they had probably the most honest election in probably the history of Virginia. And he won by a pretty good polarity. So that has to be replicated nationally. And if you want to get involved, go to your local precinct, volunteer, find out how to do this.
Fantastic, Chuck. And do you think it is possible to fix this country? I mean, are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic about where we are headed?
It's a huge fight. I mean, we understand the nature of the enemy. They've got the power. They've got the money. They're internationally connected. This is, you know, they're not taking any prisoners. You know, this is not going to be pretty. I mean, it's a tough uphill slog, but I believe that it can be done. I think the American people, they're underestimating the fact that Americans, both liberal and conservative, they want a future of freedom. I mean, there's still a consciousness of who we are. And I think there is pushback. There is a growing sense that the regime is illegitimate and that there are major problems with that across the board. And you can look at any area and you can see that this is a regime that's acting irrationally. They're doing things that are not sane and are not in the interest of the country. And I think people can see that. And hopefully they're going to express that at the midterm. Republicans must take back both houses, even if it's a rhino Republican, as awful as that is. They still are better than the Democrats, just so that party is in place. And the MAGA Republicans will then be able to start moving on investigating some of this stuff. I think that that'll happen. And I think Trump will win re-election in 2024.
Wouldn't that be something? Chuck, before we let you go, what is the best way to get your new book? Do we get it from your website or through Amazon? And also, how can people get your previous books? How do people listen to your radio show and follow you?
Thank you, Alex. All of my books are available at Amazon Books, at Barnes & Noble Books. The Biden Coup, the Sociopolitical Effects of an Illegitimate Regime. My program is, the flagship station is Rumble, Charles Moskowitz Live. And you can check it out there.
Fantastic. Well, Charles, thank you so much for joining us. Charles Moskowitz, folks, fantastic radio host, excellent author, and a friend of the show. Thank you, Charles. Really appreciate it. Folks,
Alex.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Charles. I'm Alex Newman, folks. This is Conversations That Matter for the New American Magazine. Go check out our website. Go to thenewamerican.com. If you are not yet subscribed to the print magazine, you should go do that right now. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, I'm Alex Newman. God bless you all.